Coming up today, NSA leaks link Russia to election hacking, we try Snapchat's glasses and examine everything that was announced at Apple's developer conference. You're listening to episode 321 of the Wired UK podcast, your weekly guide to the best of science, ideas, tech, business and design. I'm your host Matt Burgess and joining me today is Victoria Wollaston.
Hello.
And Jeremy White.
Hello.
This week the new issue of Wired magazine has been released on newsstands. It's a double issue and our cover feature is covering Ben Ainslie, where we are exploring his journey to win the America's Cup. Things aren't going exactly ideal for him at the moment, but it's a really in-depth, detailed look at the science behind the training and all the technology behind these really incredible boats that are being used for sailing. And it's one of the hardest challenges in the world.
One of the videos that was actually in the story made me feel tired. Do you see the sailors running from one side of the boat? It's absolutely insane.
Yeah, it's a really in-depth, detailed look at actually one of the hardest challenges in sport, really, and sailing. And you just don't realise, or I'm not too familiar with how with sailing, and you just don't realise how intense it is and how much really time, money, effort is spent on all these things. That's one of the things in there. I think we're going to get Zhao on the podcast next week, maybe to talk a little bit more in detail about the science behind it. Mm-hmm. But there's also Ollie's feature on Improbable, the UK's newest unicorn. There's a watch supplement by Jeremy.
There is a watch supplement for all of you out there who do like your watches. We cover a lot of this on Wired. Lots of people think that watches it's a very old fuddy-duddy industry, but there's loads and loads of innovation in the watch world. New materials used, you know, whole new techniques, and also, I mean, not this is a completely separate from the smartwatches actually. So the watch supplement is out. Actually, it's free to download. It's not chargeable. So if you go onto our app and you don't have to sign up to subscribe to the magazine, although you should, but you can download the watch, the digital version of the watch supplement on a phone, on Android and iOS, and on a tablet, Android and iOS as well. And it's bloody good. It really is, you know, everything you'd want to know about all the cool new watches coming out from all sorts of budgets, you know, cheap swatches all the way up to the world's most complicated million-pound watch from Vacheron, and we've got a big feature on how they created that watch, and it's mind-blowing what they actually did to create that.
But what's really interesting, Jeremy, is that I never realised that these designers or these watches are so sought after and such skilled tradesmen that you're not allowed to know their names because they could be poached.
That's right, master watch designers. We have an interview with one of them who developed that piece, and we cannot name him, because as soon as the other watch companies find out who this person is, they'll try and steal him. So their identities are closely guarded.
Wow.
So that's what's in this issue of the month, this issue of the magazine. There's a
Absolutely.
Lot more. There's a lot more in
loads
there as
more,
well.
Loads more.
Plenty to keep you reading. Go out, buy it. Read it online when we put all the articles online as well. Download, etc. I think that's the plug over.
Or what we should probably say is that we are, hopefully later today, or certainly this weekend, we're on Android.
Yes.
Which, admittedly, finally, but we are our magazine is now on Android, and it's not just this issue that's going on Android. Kieran and Pip have actually spent a long time putting a year's worth of issues back onto Android for the different tablets and phones. So once that goes live, we'll be talking about it on the website. We'll probably talk about it next week on the podcast as well, so just look out for it.
Excellent. That's your holiday reading sorted, then.
Exactly. Plenty of stuff there. Jeremy, is there something that you've learnt this week?
There's a couple of things I've learnt this week, actually. I've learnt that transporting every 1 kilogram of mass to Mars costs $2 million for just 1 kilogram, which explains why weight saving in space travel is absolutely key. And I learned this actually watching the IKEA Democratic Design Conference the other day.
Sorry, you said IKEA.
IKEA, yeah, yes, absolutely, yeah.
IKEA and Mars, what?
IKEA and Mars, that's right. Go on the website, you'll find out why. But yes, IKEA are planning on sort of like doing some research on people travelling to Mars to try and bring you sort of space-saving products. But also what was interesting is that they talked about one of their design failures. You don't normally get companies like this talking about where they've stuffed up. So I thought this was quite interesting. They produced, the Air Sofa. And they even went as far as inventing, it was an inflatable sofa, they invented a new plastic for it, so make sure it actually worked. And they thought this was a brilliant idea. It could be, you know, packaged down to virtually nothing, blown up, and then used as a proper full-size sofa. But they just didn't go about, they didn't really comprehend two main issues with it. The fact that it was so light, people don't want their sofa wandering around their apartments. And so they found that people didn't like it because it just the sofa would just sort of migrate softly around the room.
In a breeze.
Yeah, exactly. So they didn't want that at all. So people didn't like that. Also, you were meant to blow it up with a hairdryer, which is a very cool idea. Yes, of course, that's a great thing to do. What they didn't comprehend was that most people, practically everybody, dries their hair with the heat setting on. And so they were shoving these hair dryers into this thing with the heat setting on and made of plastic. And it actually ruined the seal because it heated up the plastic too much. And so what they should have done was actually made sure that, like, no, make sure the air is cold. Make sure the air is cold. So it was quite a nice sort of reveal, a peek behind the curtain of a company that's such a huge global success in interiors, whether you like their product or not, whether you agree with their design ethic or not. But it was quite nice when any company like that comes clean us up. Look, this is where we completely got it wrong. Anyway, so I learned that this week.
Yeah, it's rare for companies to hold their hands up to things.
That's right.
Victoria, have you learned anything this week?
So we are not talking too much about the election in this podcast, mainly because we're recording it on election day, but it will go live after the results are in. So, or just before, but for the week after. So we won't know who's in the position of power, so we're not talking about it. Other than my fact, obviously. So I got a bit preoccupied. I was walking to the tube station yesterday, and Euston in particular has got quite a large homeless, large number of homeless people outside. And it got me thinking that some of the policies and the manifestos relate directly to that, to homelessness. So now I thought, well, I wonder if homeless people can vote or what the deal is with that. And they can. So I learned that they actually can.
Oh,
so
great.
Sort of. I mean, they need to have not an address in the way that we do, but they need to have somewhere that they have an extended length of stay. So if they're in a shelter or something that they are in regularly, then they can register that address. Also, people in mental hospitals or hospitals generally who class that as an extended period of stay can register. And that's the reason why people in prison can vote as well. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Definitely.
Yeah, I saw something the other week related to this, actually, where people were appealing for people to say that homeless people could live at their address or that just register them at addresses.
Absolutely.
So people could vote, which was quite a nice movement to go on. So, yeah.
Especially when the policies directly affect them and their situation, they should be given that right to do it.
Yeah, everybody should vote, and hopefully lots of people listening to this have done and are and will.
Exercising their democratic rights.
Yes. Yeah,
absolutely, get out there.
And that's all we're going to say on the election. Something that I've learnt this week, I'm going to make you guess. And it's actually a fact that may now be new, may now have been replaced, but we'll go with it for now.
Selling at Burgess, it sounds like it's so good.
It.
So, how much money was spent on subscriptions in the App Store in 2016?
Oh.
It's a big number.
Apple App Store? Or
yes, Apple App Store.
Right.
And the reason that I said that it may now be displaced is because Apple held their developer conference this week, which we're going to talk about later. So, for 2016.
So, right, okay. Subscriptions, not in-app purchases.
No, we're saying subscriptions here.
To magazines. Or to
what
anything.
Qualifies a subscription? Burgess, you've not thought this through.
I've not thought this through, but I've got a number here for subscriptions.
Put us out of our misery.
It's billions. It's billions.
Billions and billions.
£2.1 billion.
Yeah.
Which
My
is
God.
A huge amount of money. And apparently 2017 was, 1st of January 2017, was the most busiest day in the App Store ever.
Ah, people getting new phones at Christmas maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah, hungover on New Year's Day, downloading some new apps.
Weight loss apps.
And one of those apps that you might download from the App Store is Snapchat, which...
Oh, that was smooth,
that
Burgess.
That was the smoothest link that I've ever done.
Cashmere.
I thought you were going to say Wired. Nope, Snapchat. Oh, it's me, I'm up.
You are.
Victoria, why are you up?
So, Snapchat, yes. So, Snapchat last year unveiled their spectacles, which, when they first got announced... looked like absolute nonsense. They're basically a pair of sunglasses with some cameras in them. And anyone who learned or read the stories about the lessons of Google Glass were quite surprised to see that Snap, which is now, it's not called Snap, Snapchat at the time, was releasing a hardware product that recorded people in public. Anyway, it proved really popular, as Snapchat things tend to do, and now you can get Snapchat spectacles in UK and Europe.
Yeah,
so this is a limited rollout, or are they actually available wide?
So they're doing it in a similar way they did to the US. They have these Snap vending machines, the Snap bots. They're bright yellow things, and the first one has been put down by the London Eye. You go there, there's a limited number in there, you buy them, and they're yours. Eventually, they will roll them out more widely.
Okay.
So we have some in the office. Vicky Turk, actually, our new senior editor, she took them out on a little bit of a tour of London to try and see how they work. And I will be honest, I've actually been sold on these now. I put them on. I looked super stylish. Burgess put them on, took a selfie of himself.
Didn't look very stylish.
No, well, it's your face. but actually, they're pretty nice looking sunglasses for what they are. The videos that Vicky produced on it, it's not super high res, but I think the selling point of them is they're not meant to be these really stylized devices in terms of the video. If Instagram released some glasses like this, you'd expect everything to be filtered and properly aligned and white balance and all that sort of stuff. Snapchat is meant to be, or the Snapchat specs are meant to be, just recording a moment. And then the snaps themselves get uploaded straight to your Snapchat app, and you can choose to share them with a small group of people, with everyone, but you can also save them in your memories thing. The weird thing about it is that, obviously, being sunglasses and they're circular, the videos are circular, and that's quite a weird thing to, when you're watching it, it's quite a strange thing to watch. But I quite like them.
The styling is definitely slightly more feminine, I feel, when I'm looking at them. I think, but they're, I mean, when you, I wouldn't say I'm sold completely on the styling, but when you consider how bad Google Glass was, for example, this is like a million miles better. So I can understand why, you know, these things are perfectly, you know, acceptable to actually wear out and about. I'm still slightly puzzled why, after they've been actually out so long and they've been making these now for quite some time, this very sort of staggered rollout, vending machines, then we'll bring them out later. Like, you know, I can understand that bringing it out in the US, sort of testing the market, you know, or maybe they had, you know, initial production issues, or they want to say, well, let's see how they go down. We'll produce a small amount and see how they go off. It does generate coverage, this idea of, you know, of having this sort of guerrilla planting of the product, and you have to go and seek it out and you have to find out where the vending machines are. But I don't understand why they just if they're behind the product, just roll it out, just put it out there, let everyone have it. I think it's a really, you know, a clever idea. How much are they, by the way?
£130, well, £129.99.
So,
which is weird.
Not a massive, I mean, the same price as a pair of Ray-Bans, basically.
But they're also, if you think that Snapchat's meant to be directed at millennials who earn slightly less, it's still quite a lot of money to spend on something like that.
It's the standard pair of sunglasses, but, you know, with that added, you know, functionality of it. I mean, what's the battery life like? I don't know, actually.
I don't think it's great.
And it's one of those things where if they improve the styling just a little bit more, I think they could really take off. I mean, they already are really taking off, but I think, you know, it's one of those things where I really would like some seriously good industrial designer to take that idea and really go to town with it.
Yeah, and I think we obviously made the link to Google Glass because of the way that it's wearable, that it can film and stuff. But Snap are very quick to say they're actually nothing like Google Glass because they film. You can't see what you're filming.
Yeah.
It's up to, I think, 30-second long clip, so it's not like you can film all the time. Whereas Google Glass was trying to fit this tiny little screen in front of your eyes. So there are differences there. In Vicky's little London tour, she was speaking to some guy who had been shouted at by a shopkeeper because the shopkeeper didn't want to be filmed. And that's where it's similar to the Google Glass for all, about the whole privacy thing.
Yeah.
The glasses are very quick to, they have a flashing light on there, so it will say when they're recording. But it was still, if someone was looking at me and I was like, what are you doing? Why
exactly
are you recording me? It's still a little bit odd. That whole process of doing that is a little bit strange.
Yeah, they do seem like an interesting play from Snap, because Snap is now saying it's a camera company, it's not a social network, that's how it wants to be seen, and this is its first hardware product. I think that the estimates on this have been, in the US, there's roughly around 90,000 sales, which is not fantastic.
No.
But for a long time, they were actually just selling these from vending machines, then they put them online, I think, in February this year. So,
well, our Wired colleagues, our US Wired colleagues, I think I read their report, and they drove something like 2 hours to get to the vending machine, you know, and it's like, that's dedication to detail, you know, to duty, guys. I take my hat off to you. I would not drive 2.5 hours or whatever it was to go and find a pair of Snapchat glasses, but there you go.
But I guess you're talking about, yeah, it's relatively low numbers, But one, obviously that's limited edition, so they probably sold out or close to selling out. But two, that is still made money for a company that was traditionally not making much money. They had this huge base and they were relying on advertisers, and now they've managed to sort of hit the market a little bit with something that's actually making the money, which then hopefully will be used to put into their app and put into their other services. So it might even just be that's the reason why it's limited edition. That's the reason why they're not putting huge amounts in it, because they just want to get bigger overheads on it.
Yeah, it's a very valid point. And there's rumours that they're making a drone to do the same sort of thing, to upload videos to your Snapchat, which is obviously taking things to a whole new level, literally and figuratively.
They should buy the air selfie company. Where you know, that little tiny credit card tile drone, credit card size drone, where they just sort of like, you take it out of your pocket and you throw it out in the air, and all it does is just go away from you, takes a picture of you and your group, and then comes back.
Oh, Burgess would love that. Burgess loves a selfie.
Yeah, well, you can't beat them. These Snapchat glasses are out now in the UK. You can if you can find the vending machine, you can go and buy them from there. You can read Vicky Turk's review of them online and have a look at her circular videos from a little tour around London. Let us know what you think. If you buy some, we'll be interested to see how much they get used here in the UK. And to move from Snapchat to another product-related story, Jeremy, Apple was holding its developer conference in San Jose this week.
It was, yes. The inevitable onslaught of Apple news that follows the Worldwide Developers Conference. You can't get away from it, and you certainly have to cover it. But it's what's interesting about these conferences these days is that it wasn't that many years ago that you used to have... you know, very little idea about what they were going to announce. The level of secrecy was much, much better in the old days. And this time, most tech journalists could practically write the news stories before the announcements even came on stage, because they'd been leaked so heavily. So, I mean, the obvious thing was the HomePod, the much rumored and trailed Siri speaker from Apple. They tried desperately to make
Siri speaker. Though,
no,
is
no,
it?
Exactly. They tried desperately to make this a music speaker that just so happened to have, you know, smart technology and AI technology inside it. It's, you know, it has got some, you know, some reasonable music smarts. You know, it's got its 7 tweeter array, which is cool. It's got a built-in woofer, and it runs on the Apple's A8 chip as well, which makes it an incredibly powerful product. You know, it's probably one of the most powerful products in this category.
I think that chip was used in the iPhone 6.
That was it. So I mean, so this is, you know, you won't have anyone else using that sort of level of tech in these things. 7 inches high, so it's not very big. And they say what it does is that it has a six microphone array, so you can speak to Siri wherever you are in the room, but also it uses that microphone array to adjust the sound as it bounces it around the room. You can stereo pair them. The design has come under a little bit of flack. it's a perfectly acceptable design. It doesn't exactly, you know, make me want to sing and dance just looking at it. But some very unkind people have been comparing the white version. It comes in white and black, space grey. Some unkind people are comparing the white version to a toilet roll, which it does, you know, I can see that. But it comes in at a remarkably expensive... well, a reassuringly expensive $350, and it's going to be coming to the US later in the year, I imagine, or start of next. So this is an expensive product. When you consider that a Sonos Play One speaker is about 120 quid, 130 quid, you know, that's a serious, and that is a very, very good speaker. Yes, it hasn't got the connected home, you know, smarts. It hasn't got the, but you will be able to use Alexa very soon to control your Sonos system. But I bring it up because Apple made a big play about saying this is a speaker, this is a music product, HomePod, for Christ's sake. They called it HomePod. So it'd be interesting to compare the two, really. And, you know, and especially as they announced as part of the software updates this upgrade to AirPlay, which basically allowed you to use AirPlay as a form of controlling a multi-room sound system, with obviously lots of different makes of speakers. So they released that. They had the all-new Mac Pro, which was the most powerful Mac ever made. 22 processors, up to 22 teraflops, memory up to 128 gigs, much as 4 terabytes of storage. Now, This is a huge.
This is a serious piece of kit.
Piece of kit, which most people will never buy because it's about $5,000. It is purely for the creative audience, which have been neglected really by Apple over the last few years. And so as they were concentrating on the consumer market, and there had been rumblings and grumblings and stuff like, you know, what's in it for the creatives? So this was definitely a nod towards them and an answer to, you know, Surface's Microsoft's area headway in this area with their Surface Studio, for example, which was very well received. It does sort of try and banish the memory of that old iMac Pro, which, you know, looked like a black cylindrical bin and wasn't very well received at all. So this is them trying to go. However, the industrial design is very familiar. It looks very much very similar to the existing iMacs, and hasn't got the design bells and whistles that the Surface Studio has, like with its folding down shape to be like a drawing desk. So that's something that they haven't gone for. They've thrown an amazing amount of technology at inside, and very cleverly too. The way the whole thing can cool itself is a whole new system. That's very cool. They've got obviously the new High Sierra operating system. Safari runs 80% faster. You know, built-in autoplay blocking and so on like that. You've got Amazon coming to Apple TV. So they obviously, you know, they've kissed and made up there. That's all very nice. This sets up something for, you know, Apple TV later in the year, we would imagine, because, you know, that's now a couple of third-party apps that bring 4K content to Apple TV, but, you know, they can't actually show it, so they'll have to address that. There was a very slight, nod towards Apple Watch, where there were like a new AI watch face with the characters from
Toy Story, Buzz Lightyear.
Yeah, I mean, very fun, but it was, and then this a Siri, Siri watch face, which automatically displays the information relevant to you, like, you know, what's coming next in your calendar, reminders. I mean, nothing amazing.
Google Assistant, anyone? It's yeah, very similar.
Exactly. I was really pleased with some of the stuff for iOS 11 they announced, messages comes integrated with Apple Pay, for example, which lets you pay your friends directly through a text. That's a very clever idea.
I think it's a bit of a game changer, actually.
Absolutely. That's a really, really clever idea. And a totally redesigned App Store. And then, trying to catch up with the world of VR and AR, they launched ARKit for their developers again. And, basically, your iPhone can now detect surfaces and add AR objects on top of them. So like they showed a coffee cup on an actual table, for example. And this, hundreds of millions of iPhones and iPads will now have AR capability, making this one of the biggest platforms in this area in the world. So it's a very clever idea. And they also showed some sort of integration with HTC Vive as well. So they are, without having to say it, without saying it, they are basically going, we've ceded a lot of sort of ground to the other, to Google, to Amazon, and to in these areas, and they're now going like, okay, we're not going to let you take any more ground from us, so they're coming back with a vengeance, which I thought was very, very clever, really. But I think one of the best things I liked about it was the iPad Pro 10.5-inch. Now, I've got the 13-inch iPad Pro, and I've also got the 9-inch one, and it really is a case. I know it sounds stupid, but it really is a case that one is too big and one is too small if you do a lot of travelling. Only slightly, but I don't use a laptop very much anymore these days. You know, that has allowed it to replace a laptop in my daily life. And the idea of having this sort of mid-size with that size allowing a full keyboard is absolutely spot on. I think that's a really, really clever idea from them. And it's one of the fastest models yet, with a 6-core A10X Fusion chip in it as well. Adds HDR video, 64 gig of memory. But the thing is, with the new iOS taking along, I mean, which looks very similar to the Mac OS, with a much bigger dock system, files, drag and drop, all of that things coming to the iPad makes it a very strong laptop competitor.
Closes the gap so
it does
much,
absolutely
it?
And it's crazy, but I think I know that's a long list to take in.
That's a lot. Well, Apple did.
They did
a huge,
it was a huge
3
thing.
3 hours.
I know. God, didn't we all feel it too, every single hour. But what I thought was very, the takeaway, apart from those highlight products, what was interesting was that there was so little time spent on the tvOS, and there was so little time on watchOS as well. And these are two big pillars of Apple's strategy, and nothing on those at all. So I thought it was very interesting by the omission of those things. I also wanted to talk. I wanted them to talk more about design. That, you know, they had an opportunity with the launch of the HomePod to really bang on about why they've made it to look that way, why they've got the, you know, that sort of form factor.
It's what they do for every other product they've done.
Where was Johnny Ive?
Where's the Johnny Ive video? Where was it starts off with it's all clinky plinky music, and then his narrative comes in. Like, we were all waiting for that one particular thing, and he wasn't even there.
And you couldn't talk much about the design of the new iMac Pro because it looks very much like the old versions. And so that was their one area where they could come in and talk about that. So, again, it was the omissions that I found most interesting on the day itself. I know that's a boring, long-winded answer, but I think that was, you know, genuinely, where was the design chat? It's what Apple's known for.
Yeah.
Vicky, any particular takeaways from you?
I particularly liked the auto blocking of videos. Mm. It seems like a really tiny thing, but oh my God, it winds me up.
So this is in the new version of Safari?
Yes. Yeah. So I want to choose whether I want to watch a video or not. And I don't want it to start playing. I don't want to be on the train and some random video just starts playing. So I thought that was quite a key thing that they included, but sort of slightly underlooked. And the paying Apple Pay text message thing I thought was really, really interesting. Again, things that I could see myself using were the real takeaway things from me from the conference. What about you, Burgess?
I think that, well, because it is a developer conference, a lot of the things are going to be smaller updates, and there's not necessarily going to be a really big flashy thing. Obviously, there was the HomePod, but I don't think that's going to set anybody's world on fire when it's compared to Google Home and the Amazon Echo. But I think for me, looking forward towards the next iPhone that's supposed to be the 10th edition of the iPhone that's released in September, October, or announced later this year, I think that AR and VR stuff that Apple have hinted at is going to be quite a big play, and we could see some more AR and VR capabilities on the new iPhone when it comes out.
Absolutely.
I think that's going to be an interesting thing for me looking forward.
If you like this sort of stuff, have a listen to the next episode of Gearhead, our new
gadget
podcast. And we're going to be delving a lot deeper into this. You know, it's going to be a few weeks until we do the next one, a couple of weeks, but it gives us time to digest exactly what these new products are, what they do, what's good and bad about them. And we're also going to have, with a bit of luck, a nice exclusive chat with the head of design from IKEA as well. So look out for that if you want to hear more about the Apple product.
Yeah, and the first episode of Gearhead, which you just mentioned, is our new podcast, is out now. It should be on your podcast feed.
Yes, it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's Jeremy's new gadgets-inspired, products-obsessed podcast, which in the first edition is featuring Mark Ronson.
Absolutely, yeah, that's right. Mark Ronson, superstar DJ Mark Ronson. We got him to, he's never used these AI assistants, and we got him to ask Alexa questions about himself. And it's Wired UK and Ars UK joining forces on this. It's really quite interesting to hear how Alexa does with Mark Ronson
asking
questions.
It's Mark Ronson inception, isn't it? It's Ronson asking about Ronson. Yeah, it's brilliant. It's really fun.
Also, if you like your DJs and Mark Ronson's music, he talks all about the gear he uses in the studio as well as at home. So check it out if you're interested.
Yeah, and we've got a short clip of that now.
Alexa, who is Mark Ronson?
Mark Daniel Ronson is an English musician, DJ, singer, songwriter and record producer.
Oh, yeah. Well done, Alexa.
Blimey, okay.
Right, okay, next all right, one, next, right one. Next one.
Alexa, how many Grammys does Mark Ronson have?
Adele took in top honours at the 59th...
What the hell's that?
For the final story this week, we are talking about the elections. Not the UK elections, because we've said we're not really going to touch upon that because we don't know the result or anything yet, but the presidential election from last year in the US. So a report this week from The Intercept, a rival publication, I guess, but a publication that does a lot around surveillance and information security and actually everything around this sort of area, has published a document from the NSA, the National Security Agency in the US, which actually ties the Russian military intelligence services to the attempts to hack the US election. So we sort of knew that the election was targeted by Russian officials or hackers linked to Russia, not necessarily Russia directly, but sort of Russian actors, as they're called in the jargon. But this document is the sort of the most explicit admittance, really, that the US security services have looked at Russia and their links. So the document came out as part of a leak, and within it, it said that the a hacking group, it didn't name the hacking group, that was redacted, the actual details of who they were, but it does say they were linked to Russian military intelligence, launched a phishing campaign against a company, or hacked a company last year, which is tied to the US election, and then actually used details from this company to try and launch phishing attacks against companies, against officials that were working as part of the election campaign. So it's a fairly explicit acknowledgement that the Russians were involved in this sort of attempt.
Well, we talked about WannaCry recently. I know that's ransomware and this is a phishing thing, but that was targeting weaknesses in a system. And this is sort of a similar thing. So by targeting these election officials, I mean, how did the actual campaign work?
So according to this document, and it's been pretty much proved that this is a legitimate document, the NSA has sort of acknowledged it in a way, but we'll come on to that in a minute. So within the phishing emails that were sent to the people who were working on local elections, there was a email there was a Word attachment which contained malware that was potentially used to try and infect machines or gather more data or something like that. We're not fully sure on the full details there, but yeah, these emails were sent out to 100 election officials, and they were just trying to gather information about the systems used, potentially affect the systems, but there's no sort of evidence of that, and there is no evidence that actually anything affected the election. I think that's something that's still going to come out a little bit further on down the line, but it was a case of, yeah, they were trying to infect other machines with a script and really try and just gather information and data about this and get inside the systems that were running these sorts of processes.
Well, one of the examples that they gave of the way they could have potentially used this hack was to set up a fake email account or set up a fake system where that person could then submit multiple votes for a certain candidate. That's how it's linked. So they don't know that for definite, and the NSA will probably never find out exactly the details from this. But that's just one example of the way they could have used this to influence the election.
Yeah, and as we say, we don't actually know any specific details on it happening, but the importance of this document coming out shows that the NSA were looking at this, and they actually have evidence to suggest that, yes, there were Russian actors involved in trying to hack election systems, maybe not the entire election, but there was definitely a really big interest. And this comes after a couple of weeks after Putin explicitly said that Russia has not hacked people or has not tried to hack people. He said it was theoretically possible that this could happen, an election could be hacked, but he explicitly denied that his country had done anything, whereas this sort of goes against it. And it comes at a time when, later today, as we're recording this, James Comey, the ex-FBI director, is due to testify to Congress about what he knows about Trump and that sort of and that investigation that's going on there. So it's all really linked in and very timely. But there's also another element to this NSA leak that we should probably talk about, and that is that already somebody has been charged and arrested with leaking this document to The Intercept. So a 25-year-old NSA contractor, so she didn't work for the NSA directly, but like Edward Snowden, was part of a company that was that's paid to work for the NSA, called Reality Winner, which is a fantastic name, but that detracts away from the seriousness of her arrest and this whole incident. She has been arrested over the actual leaking of this document, which is pretty significant because Trump in recent weeks has said that he wants leaks from intelligence agencies to stop, and he's probably going to make a bit of an example of this person.
What sort of sentence could she get if she's found guilty?
Up to 10 years at most, which is pretty serious for leaking one document. And actually, it's within the legal documents calling for her arrest. There was a little bit of an interesting snippet about how she was found to have leaked this document.
This is really interesting, I think. So there have been a couple of reports recently about various different things, leaked documents, and there's always this, like the shadow broker stuff. It's always that aim to try and verify how accurate this information is. And a lot of the time, no one really says anything, and they sort of go, well, we can get clues from X, Y, and Z. But this, the leaked document and the arrest and all the reports came out, if you put them all together and how they actually found who had done this, it's so simple, but so interesting.
Yeah, so reality winner was identified through The Intercept as a publication, approached the NSA for a comment on the story, and as part of this, they sent the document to the NSA for them to say yes or no, this is like an official, legit document. And through that, the NSA could see, well, they could see there's printer marks on the paper, which they can sort of identify the date and time that it was printed in terms of how the inkjet uses that. But also they could see on their systems how many people had access to this document. So there were only a limited number of people that could access this. And I think the six people printed the document, and Reality Winner was one of them. And then they checked her emails and the systems as well. And it showed that she'd been in touch with that publication.
Oh,
so they just really put these links together. So it's quite...
Because you assume with these sorts of things that they're going to do these really in-depth studies into, oh, there's like really specific things within behind the scenes on a computer or something. But this is relatively straightforward. It's almost like you've joined the dots automatically. I could have probably worked this out if I know, and I'm not technically minded. So I think there's been a lot of criticism of The Intercept for inadvertently dropping her in it, throwing her under the bus.
Yeah, and it's obviously, as a publication, it does a lot to protect its sources, but I think it's made a mistake on this in some respects, because there's been an arrest straight away and this person was not properly protected. Although from the other side of things, there wasn't that many people that could actually access this. You could probably pretty much work it out anyway. And in terms of leaking, there are probably better ways to do it than directly emailing and contacting. And there's secure ways to send things to publications. And lots of publications have specific secure leak lines and systems set up to do this. So it's troubling on that level, but also it's a really interesting thing to have come out of, seeing the links between Russia and the election hacking.
Has there been any reaction from the administration regarding this?
Not that I've seen.
I can't imagine they would.
No.
But as I said, Trump has said he wants to crack down on leaks coming out of intelligence agencies. So I think this is probably going to be a good example for him, where he might set a precedent, or if it depends how much he's involved in it. But I imagine he will comment on it at some point.
Well, that's the thing. Snowden's actions divided so many people. So people who are like, no, this isn't our interest to know this sort of stuff. You've got people on the other side playing devil's advocate, just going, actually, you're a traitor and this, that and the other. The more times this happens, especially with this being a mistake by The Intercept, people are going to be reluctant to do it. So in the future, we may not see these sorts of things. And there is an argument to be said that we sort of, if this stuff's going on, we should know about it. So that's my concern, is that you're right. I think it could set a precedent, which actually goes to things not coming out when they should, and things being a lot more secretive.
Yeah, that is very much the case. And it's one of these stories that's probably going to continue for a few weeks, and we'll keep on top of it as much as we can. And that's, I think, about all we've got time for this week.
A serious end
to the podcast. But download or have a listen to Jeremy's Gearhead podcast. As we mentioned, the new issue of Wired is out now. You can get it on newsstands. You can get it in stores. Yeah. All the content will be online later in the month. But please go out, buy the edition, have it in paper in your hand. It's really good to read. It's a double edition, so it'll keep you going for twice as long.
And if you do want to get your general election fix, tomorrow, Roland Manthorpe of Upvote fame will be recording a reaction podcast. So if you haven't listened to any of his Upvote series so far, so we're drowning in podcasts at the moment, but they are really, really good. He's spoken to lots of different people about fact-checking and about polling. So tomorrow he's going to be doing a report just looking at basically the manifestos, who's now in power, all the different things that are going to happen from now on. So it'd be worth coming back tomorrow.
It will.
Yeah. Wired is here for your hourly pleasure.
And on that note...
And on that note, goodbye.
Bye-bye.